am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.
I just love that song. This is Jan Revell, and welcome to Purpose Talk Radio on this Monday in February, February 4th, Valentine's Month. Well, we are not at Valentine's Day yet, but I hope you are making your plans for romance this month, and romancing with yourself, even if not with somebody else. But even if you are making plans for having a love fest with someone else, be sure to have a love fest with yourself as well. This is critically important. So that's, what a way to start. Our song, our opening and closing song, I Am Who I Am, is a True Trinity. They are a fabulous group, and you can find them on truetrinity.com. You can listen to the song, you can purchase the song, and they have other songs available as well. So be sure and visit them. Remember to also join us on the Purpose Talk Radio Conversations group on Facebook. Go to Facebook, do a search for Purpose Talk Radio Conversations, and request to join. And Cindy or somebody who's there paying attention will bring you right into the group so you can join the conversations. It's going to be an awesome day. It's going to be a power-filled day. Our guest today is Jeff Brown from Toronto, and he's going to be talking, continuing the series on healing with abuse. I want to read the cards for today. Let me see. Did I take care of all the housekeeping issues? I think I did. Except you can contact me at purposetalkradio.com. Remember that you can go to purposetalkradio.com and you can make a donation. You can also sponsor a show if you'd like to. If you have suggestions for show guests for our show, you can participate in that by doing that as well. And what else? I'm sure I'm missing something, but if I am, Cindy will let me know what it is. So I want to give gratitude for Cindy Freeman for being the facilitator for this show on Facebook and here on the radio. And it's just, I don't know what I would do without her. She's absolutely fabulous. So I ended up with two cards for today. You know, when you're doing the cards and I use two fingers. And I don't mean to have it go on two different cards. I assume it's going to go on one card, but then you end up with two cards. So today we have two cards, and they're really, really amazing cards. Melody is a very bright and colorful card. It shows a young woman who's got a golden skirt. She's on her knees. There's a crown on her head. There are brilliant flowers all around her. And at her knee is a little gnome-like character. It looks like he's got little horns, but I'm not sure if those are leaves from the blossoms. In any case, he's playing a fiddle, and he has this beatific smile on his face. And she is looking within. So she's listening to the music, but she's looking within. There's this profusion of color around her, and yet she can't see it because she's looking within. So she's not being distracted by all of the flowers or by all the colors. She's listening to the music and looking within herself. And I think that's a good lesson for all of us as we deal with healing, as we deal with living, is to make sure that you listen to whatever your music is and that you look within, that the flowers that are around us are gorgeous, but don't be distracted by them. Make sure that you keep looking within. The second card is an amazing card. It's incredibly powerful. It's called the Third Eye. And it shows what appears to be, it's hard to tell if it's a fish or a lizard of some sort, because it has claws. Most fish that I know don't have claws, and it has a foot with claws on it. But this creature, in any case, is lying there with its eye closed, and inside of it is a woman whose eyes are also closed. Her hands are folded up by her throat, and she has a crystal at her third eye. This fish lizard character is another young woman who is also lying there, and she has both of her hands raised. One is resting on one arm, and the other is resting on the lizard's head, and she is looking, again, looking within. She's not focusing on anything outside. And all around them appears to be perhaps the tail of this creature that creates a circle that looks like the third eye. So what I get from this card, the message of this card, is that the third eye is not a single thing and that there are many layers before we reach that third eye within ourselves. And when we do, we're surrounded by this circle that we consider the third eye. And within that circle, we see ourselves as pure. This young woman has a white gown on, and she looks very chaste and very innocent and very pure. And a lot of us are that way. We think that this is our spiritual life, pure. But then you go deeper and you come to the primitive part of ourselves, represented by this lizard creature. This is the part of us that we don't necessarily want to look at. This is the part that we consider ugly, the part that perhaps has been hurt or hurt someone else in our lifetime. And God knows I've done that both ends many times, been hurt and also hurt others. Whether intentionally or not is irrelevant. That's that part of ourselves that we consider to be ugly. And yet there it is, lying peacefully and sleeping. And in order to get to the third eye, you have to go inside of that ugliness, what we consider ugliness, what we consider to be bad about ourselves. And we have to recognize that it's not ugly or bad. It is simply part of who we are as humans. So this innocent young woman is the symbol of what purity and innocence is, one aspect of ourselves, but it's kind of an idealized aspect. The creature is our human part. It's our human nature, if you will, and it's the part that we must not only recognize but embrace in order to be able to go inside of that creature and find the part of us that sometimes is sleeping but is also dreaming our existence, and that is in that third eye. That's that young woman, or young or old, I can't tell, that is inside of this lizard. And her eyes are closed, and she's obviously sleeping or dreaming. And in the middle of her forehead is an amazing third eye. It looks like a crystal of some sort with an aura around it. So remember that going awakening to your spiritual life is not all innocence and beauty. We talk about ignorance is bliss, and that is true. Unless you go deeper and go into that part of yourself that you consider to be bad or negative or harmful, that's the part that we need to all go and accept, to recognize that this is who we are, and then go inside further than that to find the true dreamer who is dreaming this life that we're in. Remember that all of these cards that we look at, and a lot of these figures are female because of the artist, but remember that they're all gender neutral. So even though they look like female pictures, we're still talking about men and women. It's not just women. I thought of another housekeeping issue that we need to take care of, and that is that I have drawn four other cards. So if you have a question or a concern, it would be look at a card for you. We can do that. It will be following the interview with Jeff. We're limited in time today. Jeff has a stringent schedule, so we're not going to have any interruptions during the show with Jeff. We'll take all questions and requests for the cards after the interview with him. So I want you to know that, and I think that that's all the housekeeping issues that we have. So I'm going to bring Jeff into the conversation now. Welcome, Jeff. It's good to have you here. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Jan. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Well, it's really wonderful to have you here. You have such powerful stories, and I want to have you talk to us about it. And you've written a book called Soul Shaping, And that book is for sale, is that correct, on Amazon?
Yeah, that book's in the system.
Okay. So, you're in the process of writing another book?
I have another book that just came out, a quotes book of mine called Ascending with Both Feet on the Ground. That's on Amazon on my website. And, yeah, I'm working on a couple of books. I'm working on a higher consciousness love story, and I'm working on a book about my model of grounded embodied spirituality.
All right. Well, what I'd like to do, Jeff, if hopefully you're open to this, is to go back to some of your previous life and tell us a little bit about you and your relationship with abuse that you now are dealing so much with, all the work that you've done towards growing and towards healing.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in a really volatile, combative environment. You know, my mother and I had a very difficult relationship. My father and my mother had a very difficult relationship. It was really a war zone. I was a firstborn to a Jewish mother and an Irish father, and
that's a combination.
Quite a combination. And you know, it was the kind of environment that makes you or breaks you. For whatever reason, soul age or something else inside of me, I kind of went toe-to-toe with my mother on that battlefield from a very early age. And, you know, I think I was able to preserve my emotional integrity and my well-being for many years by fighting back. And I had some intuitive knowledge that releasing the material as it came and coming back to freshness, as painful as that was what was going to save me, that if I bottled up that material, that you know, horrible things would happen to me as a result of those holdings. And so I was, you know, really activated emotionally and really embodied in my feelings from a very early age, and only shut down much later in life. Like in my adolescent years, I started to shut down, I think, from it. And so when I, you know, got into my 20s, it became clear. I got into law school in Toronto, and it became clear that, you know, I had these crazy relationship patterns, and it became clear that I had to get into therapy and do some work. So I took 2 years off of law school at University of Toronto and began the therapeutic journey in the city, and, you know, did an awful lot of therapy and started to do yoga and developed a deeper and different relationship with my emotional life. And, you know, and ultimately went back to law school really energized because I'd cleared some of that debris. So I had more energy in my body and in my psyche and in my focus. And then when I was about to become a lawyer, actually right after getting called to the bar, I took a step back from law. I knew there was another path living inside of me, path of the writer and path of the therapist and all that stuff. But the first thing that happened before I really clarified the next step of my journey was I started to do a much deeper level of work with my emotional material. And I call it clearing emotional debris. I think it was chapter 3 in Soul Shaping. And spent an awful lot of time on all kinds of different levels doing release work, somatic release work, and, you know, I did a lot of talk therapy work, and I did a lot of private personal release work, and I became a kind of a release junkie, I think, for a long time. And I think it saved me. Yeah, I think that's, you know, meditation didn't do it. Meditation, I mean, you know, the quest for a meditative state was right on, but the means to get there for kind of a, already a bit of a head-tripping, armored guy to just sit on a cushion, usually it just really intensified my holdings. It was more of a bypass maneuver. And so, I realized that was frustrating and started to explore things like bioenergetics and holotropic breathwork, things that were really strong, almost like Sufi kind of discharging, you know, the Buddhist thing. Detaching didn't work for me. I had to really move into my feelings. And that changed everything. You know, every move I've made towards my true path in my life has come as a result of doing deeper emotional release work.
You know, I remember when I was doing meditation, and I love it. I love the sitting meditation and being quiet. But I remember too that when I first learned it, it was this whole thing about going into your head, to your third eye, and, you know, getting out of your body was the big thing.
Yeah.
And it took a while for me to learn that the most powerful work that I could do would be to go deep within my body, to get into that lizard part of me, you know, to be able to actually feel it and work with it and heal
Beautiful. Breathe a lizard. Well, you know, yeah. so much of what we call spirituality, I mean, I don't consider these things spirituality, but what we call spirituality in the culture are, you know, perspectives and approaches that are developed or arise from the paternalistic male meditation dude alone in the cave or on the cushion. I mean, these are not the feminine. These are not the embodied. These are not the relational release models. These are, you know, pulling up and away from the world, pulling up and away from the emotional body, awakening as something that's a waking up process rather than what Samuel Bonder called a waking down process. And for me, really, all they do is perpetuate the problem for most of us. Some people definitely need to learn how to detach from their stuff because they're, you know, if you read the beginning of Tolle's Power of Now, he talks about being suicidal, and so he found some technique that allowed him to stay alive on this planet. The problem is that those tools or mechanisms of detachment begin to become characterized as enlightenment frameworks, and they're not. They're just tools for self-avoidance where necessary, and they allow us to get a broader perspective. Really, at some point, you got to come back down and live, get back down into your body and deal with what lives inside of you, because that's where your real life is. And that emotional material, I use the term sell your soul, C-E-L-L, your soul and soul shaping, I believe repressed emotions are unactualized spiritual lessons. I grew most deeply in my spirituality, expanded my lens and matured it through my interface with my material, because by releasing my material, I created space inside for my callings to reveal themselves. When I was all bunked up, I couldn't find my path. And at the heart of those releases were learnings. Those were the issues that I came in here to learn. And by moving into them in a different way and expanding my container to hold them and learning the lessons at the heart of them, I actually matured in my spirituality. So for me, there's no distinction between the body and the emotional body and what we call spirituality. Without that piece, without getting into the heart of the pain body or the lizard and really working that material, you simply can't grow.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you.
Yeah, you're not spirit. You're just flatlined. And, you know, unfortunately, right. In the non-dual teachings, you know, a lot of these non-dual teachers are flatlined. You can't feel any energy coming off of them. They're like almost like automatons. And they're calling that some form of enlightenment when, in fact, it's completely the opposite.
Well, to me, it's sort of a split personality. You know, you've denied the humanness that you came here to experience.
That's
so
right.
What's the point?
Psychologists call it dissociation, and they call it enlightenment. So you make your choice. I mean, you know, you can't have non-duality. They define non-duality, say, as unity consciousness, by conveniently removing the uncomfortable aspects of the separateness from the field. So it can't be non-dual if you don't have an ego anymore. You don't have a self anymore. You don't have personal identifications. You're not Jan Revelle anymore. You don't have a body anymore. And you don't have any pain anymore. That's not an expanded consciousness. You know, see, what's happening, in my view of what's happening at least, is I define spirituality as reality. So if someone tells me that they're a spiritual person, to me that means that they're in more realms of reality at one time. That's all it means. What it's been taken to mean is something very singular-threaded, like a well-developed witness observer, a great meditative capacity, you know, a particular thing that you're particularly good at that people come to you to learn. And quite often it's the opposite of spirituality, because many teachers have developed one thread and have not developed any other aspect of themselves. And so to me, if we're moving towards spirituality in a real way, we have to bring the emotional body back into the equation.
Right on. Absolutely. Yeah.
So here we are, right?
Yeah, right.
Here we are.
Jeff, we hear a lot about, as far as abuse, we hear a lot about child abuse, about elderly abuse, about domestic violence, predominantly towards women. Mm. And we don't always hear a lot about abuse related to somebody who has been abused or is an abuser, and then there's that history too, or the theory that someone who's been abused as a child will often become an abuser as an adult.
Okay.
So I want to talk with you about the masculine, the male picture or experience of abuse and healing from abuse. Because we've had some speakers, some of our guests have been women, which is great. I really don't want to separate the two, but we obviously have separated in our whole society. So let's talk about about what a boy and a man goes through, and how, in particular, are the you've mentioned one difference that, for instance, a lot of women will head towards the meditative or the quiet introspective stuff, and that you required more of an active pace.
A lot of men actually, I think, will turn towards that more than the feminine.
Really?
But yeah, I mean, for me, I think I move into these processes more in the traditionally feminine way. I grew up in a Jewish house, and so it was not entirely uncomfortable to be highly emotional. It was, I wasn't coddled. I had an abrasive, aggressive mother, but there was a degree of okayness about being feeling based in that environment, mm-hmm. and it saved me. I pushed through it, but at some point I had internalized the message, the armoring message that's directed at the masculine, big boys don't cry, all that stuff. And those cliches really land,
Yeah.
So, and I think that at some point in my adolescent years, that's a big part of why I shut down the emotional current, because I really felt that it wasn't masculine or appropriate to be that wildly. I mean, I was a wild animal with feeling in my early years, and mm-hmm. it certainly saved me. I understand now that it saved me, but, then they start taking me to psychiatrists, they put me on Ritalin, they went through this whole thing, and what I was doing was preserving the emotional integrity of my organism by releasing. I mean, if I mm-hmm. hadn't released, I would have been crazy. I would have been psychotic for sure, and
yes.
Now I'm just a little neurotic, so it's okay. Because of the release framework, but,
yeah.
I think all that messaging, and then when I got into my 20s into a therapeutic environment, I was now a charged up young student, salesman, edgy, armored guy, which was very fundamental to me as well. And it took me a long time to feel like it was okay to go back into the feeling realm and move those holdings that I'd been, hanging on to from adolescent years until into my early and mid-20s, I think. Yeah. But I think that the acting out masculine, I think that survivalism is really the enemy of, the authentic life. And most people on the planet are gripped at the root chakra. And really on some level, even wealthy people with poverty consciousness, we have so much root chakra anxiety. And the masculine has developed so much as a protector on the planet. And, I think that, the warrior consciousness, which is still necessary for many of us. It's never that far away from our awareness, certainly as men who are conditioned like that. And, I think the warrior, it's not hard to see how the warrior energy could cross over and easily move from the benevolent warrior energy to the warrior run amok,
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that in myself so often where I'm benevolently intended and protective, and then immediately it doesn't take very much living in that place and not releasing enough of my holdings before I become an edgy and nasty warrior.
Wow.
It's right there. It's not that far away.
Yeah.
We're only
right.
human. It doesn't, wrong conditions. Put any right. human in the wrong conditions, they're going to act like a beast,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord knows I've seen it in myself as well.
Yeah, beast. We
yeah.
all got the beast.
Right.
We got to own that, right? I mean, it's better to own it.
That's right.
Yeah, and then to learn how to stay away from that consciousness if you can.
Mm-hmm. Well, and sometimes it's kind of like the ego. A lot of people in spiritual work talk about slaying the ego or killing
yeah.
the ego, and nothing
yeah.
likes to be killed. But if you can create an ally out of that beast part of yourself, just like out of your ego, then you have, why not learn to ride the dragon and become partners with the dragon rather than having that dragon take you out of control?
Dragon saved my life. The dragon fought my mother. The dragon wrote the
mm-hmm.
books. The dragon built a business. The dragon, that warrior consciousness, when it's used in the right way, is absolutely beautiful. It's attractive
mm-hmm.
and it's compelling. It's powerful. It's all of those things. And just like they talk about the ego, it's just another way of throwing out the self. It's another example of self-avoidance masquerading as enlightenment. There's a
right.
distinction between the healthy and the unhealthy ego. Like there's a distinction between the benevolent warrior and the malevolent warrior. So the healthy ego and the healthy self-concept are fundamental to the soul's journey. And you can't make your soul, your dreams come true without a healthy ego to make it happen in the world. So dissing
right.
ego is just another way that people in a lot of pain eradicate the self and call the place they go spirituality. Really, it's not spirituality at all.
Mm-hmm. So you talk a lot about your mother. Was your father around?
He was, but yeah, my father was he was like a manic guy. He was either violent, went through violent phases, and then most of the time, probably 80 or 90% of the time, was fundamentally a pretty depressed guy. Went in and out of the workplace, triggered all my mother's poverty consciousness memories, and that was the heart of so much of the battle between them. And
yeah.
He was a really he is a really profound Irish kind of poet. I mean, it's all what he writes is all misguided because his stuff's so mixed up. But he a lot of the depth that I'm able to find sometimes in my writing. This may be my illusion, Jan, but I like to think I got the best of the both of them.
yes, I agree.
Yes. Yeah.
But I hope you left some of them for themselves to use.
No, not much. Well, yeah, no. A small fragment. But, you know, that's how I see it. I mean, I see it generationally. I mean, hopefully the generations keep improving that, you know, if somebody in the family can pull the best of those characteristics forward and go a little farther and deeper on the path with them, the world improves over time. And I'd like to think some of that happened with the two of them. Yeah.
So you talked a lot about about arguments with your mother and standing up with your mother. Were you abused as a child?
Oh, yeah.
That you've had to overcome?
Oh, yeah. I grew up, my mother was a daily, constant, startling abuser. We now wish we had video on it because it's impossible to put it to words. It's one of those family environments where you can't really go into therapy and isolate the one trauma. It would take you, you know, 18 years to go through 18 years of traumas. It was just a wild kingdom in my family environment. We fought all day, every day. There was not a day in my entire life up until the age of 18, from the age of say 2 or 3 to 18, that there wasn't conflict in my home. It was just constant conflict. Luckily, I had fantastic grandparents that softened the edges and gave me refuge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that I pulled so much of the love from them and brought it forward into my life. I don't think if I hadn't had those grandparents, I don't think I'd be here now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned something about forgiveness bypass. Would you go into that a little bit, explain it somewhat?
Yeah. It's just another example of the ungrounded spirituality movement that in the, you know, the some portion of the New Age movement, this idea that forgiveness is somehow seen as the ultimate hallmark of spiritual maturity or something. And so often people are encouraged to forgive as a way of bypassing how they really feel. You know, for forgiveness to have any real meaning, it has to be organic. And that means you have to spend time, as much time as you need, in the emotional processes around the abuses or the events, the traumas. And then it may well be at the end of that process, once you've healed it and moved it out of you and learned some lesson, maybe at the heart of it, that you organically forgive the people. But this focus on forgiving somebody before you've actually gone through and been true to your own process is really misguided, in my opinion, and leads us away from a healthy way of relating to one another. And anger gets repressed and congeals and works against the individual. So, you know, the idea with forgiveness is to make sure that it's authentic and to not make it the number one priority of your process while you're sitting there in a heap of pain. You don't have to focus on the other person when you're in your pain. You need to focus on healing yourself. And then after that, you know, the karmic chips will fall where they may.
That's really good advice. I've always had a problem with the word forgive and forgiveness. It's like, what the heck does that mean?
I don't know. It's just another way of getting people to, you know, put things away and put on a smiley bullshit bliss trip face and move through the world as though they're completely happy. I mean, you know, I'm just really have never been particularly interested in any of that. If it wasn't genuine, I could never really fool myself for very long. And you know, and a lot of ungrounded spiritualists, a lot of Eastern spiritualists really harp about on and on about forgiveness. And, you know, because that, you know, this is the bifurcation, right? I use the term Western consciousness. The idea is to bridge the quest for unity consciousness, you know, fundamental to some Eastern traditions, with the Western emphasis on the healthy self concept and real healthy emotional processes and boundaried self. And because, you know, you have unboundaried unity and then you have to have boundaried somewhere and you need a self to come home to, and to try to bring those together. And this idea of forgiveness that betrays or disconnects from or dissociates from emotional processes is part of this whole Eastern, it's an interpretation of some Eastern spiritualities that is really disconnected from the emotional body, notions of connective integrity. You know, if there's no connective integrity, you can't claim that your heart chakra is open if you're not behaving in a way that's caring towards others. And so this divorcing of the self from spirituality is evil, actually. And it creates a whole lot more problems. You know, in the service of momentary bullshit forgiveness, we end up embedding deep, deep levels and layers of emotional harm and holding. And so really it's about, yeah, get rid of the word forgiveness and just get authentic.
Right. Well, I finally, for myself, I learned that it was a matter of letting go of my own attachment to whatever the emotion was, the hatred, the resentment, the hurt, whatever, you know, which means that I healed myself.
Sure. I mean, depends how you let it go. I mean, for me, letting go means I've got to go through the feelings.
Right.
I can never let go as a concept. It never worked for me.
Right. And so there's something that I want to talk about a little bit, is you're mentioning that forgiveness is basically dissociating yourself from your human, who you are as a human. But in order to be able to forgive, we actually have to go through the pain. And a lot of times people don't want to do that. They went through the pain once. They don't want to do it again.
Right.
They want to avoid it and do whatever they can.
Right. They want to call the power of now something called witnessing and watching your pain body like an automaton. You can't be in the now if you're not in your emotional body. I mean, what are you present for? You're not even here, right?
Right.
Right. So it really is about going back in the other direction and honoring this humanness. We were created. Let's not get into how we were created, but we were created with emotional techniques built into us, release techniques that allow us to move our way through an experience when we're ready and strong enough to do it, to a freshness, a returning freshness of appreciation. We can cry. We can rage. You know, anger has gotten such a bad reputation because of the horrible things that were committed in its name, that, you know, healthy and appropriate anger release is completely eradicated or dishonored by the New Age spirituality movement. If you remove the capacity for anger from somebody's framework, they're incomplete. They're fragmented human beings. You need to be able to move justified anger. It's the way you restore the integrity of the organism. But you know, everything that's moved us in bad directions ends up getting swept under the carpet in that framework.
Well, it used to be that when somebody had what people or physicians or psychiatrists thought was too much anger, they had a lobotomy, and then they didn't have any anger at all.
Well, there you go. That's perfect. You can do
zombies.
A lobotomy, or you could just spend a lot of time in your witness observer on the meditation cushion, and it's the same thing as having a lobotomy, but it's less expensive. You can just start talking like a flatline spiritual teacher who has no affect and call yourself expanded and enlightened and fooled all kinds of millions of people, really, if you want to. But it is like having a meditative lobotomy. It's exactly the same thing.
So,
you know, I want to be more here. You know, I want to be more here. You know, I mean, we got all kinds of reasons to not be here. But I want to brave it and be more here. And if I'm going to be here, then I got to do the opposite of what I did in my adolescent years. I got to restore and energize my emotional body. Right? Now, we don't know how to do that. We don't have techniques, so it gets a bad name, and we learn how to shut the thing down just to manage and survive life. We don't thrive, but we survive. I want to thrive, so it means I got to keep working with that emotional current. You know, Alexander Lowen said you need to kick 300 times every morning with expression and affect in order to restore yourself, because the society alone shuts down your system, let alone trauma history. And so we need to get more vital instead of less vital, right?
Well, there are a lot of, I'm going to throw an argument in here. There are some people who have gone through really serious trauma, physical trauma, sexual trauma, whatever, and they end up in this depressive spiral that the minute they get in it, it starts taking them down and they get sucked into it.
Well, they're always in it if it's not healed.
Yes, that's
right. It's always there.
So are there some techniques that you particularly recommend or know that somebody, when they start feeling that they can kick it?
You know, a few things help me. Some things help me. Holotropic breath work really helped me. Stan Grof's work, really deep, charged breath work with music. And, you know, you have to have somebody there to hold the space for you. And I did it in big groups. And I did so much release work. I did so much rage work. These practitioner supervisors would come over and lie on my back, and I would flip them off of me. I was throwing my mother from my back. That's really what I was doing. And, you know, I had profound consciousness-shifting experiences with holotropic and bioenergetics. Alexander Lowen's brilliant work, Reichian work, and John Paracco's core energetics work are fantastic release models. You know, really strongly charged, really grounded, expression oriented, really physical, and clear the holdings in the body. So that helped me a lot. I did some dynamic meditation. Osho has it on his website, description of it. I don't know if they have the music there. You have to find the right music, I think. But Osho's dynamic meditation is a fantastic way of activating the emotional body and moving the material out of your body. Really important now because we're so overstimulated that it just gives us another reason to repress ourselves. I mean, we're so overwhelmed and shut down. And, you know, these models are fading because this really is the era of the automaton. This is the era of shutdown. This is the era of detachment as the path, and we need it. It's an essential tool on the path. Detachment saved me so many times, but we need to come back into the strong expressive models if we're going to release our material. There's a scene in a film I just made called Carmageddon, where I take a picture of Bhagavan Das, who's the guru I journeyed with in this movie, and I tape the pictures of him to a foam cube, and I shred the pictures and curse him.
Oh.
After that, I have a foam cube in my house that I use for this purpose. I think they should be in every school office and home, actually, and maybe even street corners. I didn't finish my discharge in that scene with him. I had a lot more to come, but, you know, the difference between how I was in my body before that rage experience and how much clearer and cleaner and more present I felt after the experience was gigantic, right? You know, so imagine going through your whole lifetime never feeling like you have permission to release your holdings. What happens to you? You know, you just die. I mean, that's what happens to you. Yeah. We're built to move, right?
Yes. And, you know, you brought up Grof's name, breath work, and his wife was in a mental institution because everybody thought she was totally crazy, and he helped her work through a spiritual awakening.
Stan Grof's, you know, I did some stuff with him, and I hold him in high regard. He's he's a real intellectual, but really a visionary. He's one of the true visionaries, really cleanly clear in the way he looks at, behaves and interacts and boundaries and all that, which is unusual in this movement. And people should really look into it. We should be doing holotropic breath works on a weekly or biweekly basis in every community, honestly, because we've got to move the stuff. And not only do we got to move the stuff, but once you move the stuff and you use the breath as the portal, you actually have expanded consciousness experiences. You see so many of the things that people are trying to see by using ayahuasca and LSD and all the rest of it, simply by using and utilizing the breath in your body. It's fantastic.
Let's move on a little bit to a comment that you made about the connection between emotional healing and spiritual maturation, or sell your soul. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. It was just my experience that, you know, it was like every time I went deep into an emotional process, like I have a strong abandonment wound, for example, so every time I'd go deep into that material and could work something through emotionally, whether it was through expressive work or through just developing a deeper understanding of it, you know, tracing back to the source, whatever that was, I would grow in my spirituality, right? So it was like I was selling, that is, in my cells, this material was in the cells of my being, my physical and emotional body, and my soul would expand, my spirituality would expand and mature through that emotional process. And, you know, I'm of the view that everyone comes in with soul scriptures, what I call soul scriptures, a sacred purpose, whatever you want to call it, true path, you know, and that doesn't just include the calling to write a book or to host a radio show. It also includes the key emotional issues that we bring forward and that continue to plague us in our lives. And mm-hmm. the primary relationships that we have with people that ignite them, develop those issues, you know, these kind of key figures that are sticky, there's something really, you know, significant about them. Or, you know, your parents, but then people you encounter in your life. And so for me, the soul scriptures are how we shape the soul, how we expand from one stage of development to the next stage of development in this incarnation, and that these are encoded scriptures. So abandonment is an encoded scripture for me. And to the extent I can move a little forward in the way I interface with that material, be less triggered by it, or more in control of it, or even heal some of that material, I transform and mature spiritually. That's cell your soul. Repressed emotions are unactualized spiritual lessons. So this is the mm-hmm. opposite of the splitting off, dissociative version of spirituality, where your emotional body is considered to be not who you really are. Jeff Brown is not really who I ultimately am. It's some limiting identification. My body even is considered substandard. Spirituality is something above and beyond the body. And this is the opposite view. This brings together this incarnation. This doesn't make God look like an idiot for bringing us in human form, because all of it becomes part of our spiritual expansion if we fully live it. It's more like a Sufi path, say, than a Buddhist path, right?
Mm-hmm.
You jump on into your body, and in the heart of that temple, you expand spiritually.
I love that, the heart of that temple. You know, we're told, in growing up, I grew up in a Baptist church time, and we're told that your body is the temple of God. They don't, but then we go ahead and we do these terrible things to our bodies and to each other's bodies.
Yeah.
And it yeah. takes a long time, I think, to finally recognize that, wow, if this truly is the temple of my soul, of the God that I am, then I need to make some changes and do some things to really take care of it and honor it.
Yeah, and stop shaming it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
How many of us can look in the mirror at our naked body in whatever form it's in and absolutely love every part of it? I think a really small percentage of us, you know?
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Shame game. It's really a big part of survivalism, fear and shame and all of that stuff. And yeah, as we move from survivalism as our orienting principle, that is defining who we are by what puts food on the table, for example, to authenticity as our orienting principle, which is defining who we are by who we really are. You know, we have to confront the demon of shame. We absolutely have to, because how many of us believe that we're insignificant? You know, how can you imagine your life brilliantly infused with the light of sacred purpose if you look in the mirror and you can't stand yourself?
You're right. But
we got a problem. Right?
I want you to repeat that. I love that, of standing in the light brilliantly.
How can you stand in the... Right, how can you... We'll have to go back on the tape. How can you stand in the mirror and identify yourself as a magnificent being infused with the light of sacred purpose if you can't stand yourself? If you can't stand yourself, I mean, it's a little bit complicated. You know, this is what we're up against, right? You know, this idea, this inspiring, beautiful vision of possibility for the magnificent life that's waiting for us.
Mm-hmm.
It really is true. We really are magnificent. I mean, if we utilize all of our capacities and really find our soul scriptures and really live it, I mean, we are just filled with love and purpose and we'll never want to harm another soul, you know. But the problem is, our the collective unconscious, in the tissues and cells of our body, we carry forward this completely and utterly shamed self. You know, it's a reflection of where humanity has been and hopefully not where we're going. And mm-hmm. we got to figure out how to bridge those two realities because they're incongruent with each other. You know, they work.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, in writing Soul Shaping, I had spent so much time beating myself up, saying, who the hell wants to read this story? I mean, so much. Who wants to read your writing? I mean, I went, and I eventually just learned how to sit there and keep pushing through it, and that's what I had to do. I couldn't melt it any other. I just had to keep going with it. But, you know, and it never, ever fully leaves. But, you know, hopefully you create new pathways, a possibility, you entrench them, and then that starts to take up a little more space than the shame self, and a little bit more space, mm-hmm. but never really fully gone, because it's a reflection of where we're at, all of us.
So do you think that that reflection of all of us, so our cultural, well, obviously our cultural, our society, even our global reflection is embedded within us as individuals, within ourselves even?
The shamed self?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. It's in the structures of our society. It's embedded in the bones of our being. Absolutely. This stuff just keeps carrying forward. It takes forever. It takes so long to move it, you know. Those of us now who are in, say, what we call the consciousness movement, whatever that means to us, who are genuinely doing the real work, not the bypass work, not the ask the universe for what you want and you get it, not that nonsense, but the real deep transformation work, we're pioneers. You know, mm-hmm. we are brave and courageous and need to be realistic about what we're up against. You know, it's it ain't just us, it's the collective. And there's a vibration everywhere, and it's embedded in us and it's outside of us. And so every time we make a little step beyond that internally and externally, you know, go out there and claim some part of our path, it's huge. You know, we're creating new pathways for the entire collective. It's, you know, it's really something. And the problem is we expect so much. We get sold this karmic bill of goods that we can do it all in one lifetime or whatever, and we beat ourselves up when we can't do it that quickly. And, you know, I like really to tell people that growers are inchworms, so are cultures. And if you can make some bit of progress or heartway or headway in this lifetime, that's more than most of humanity's ever been able to do. I mean, it's really huge.
It is huge.
It's huge. It's going to take a long time. It's really huge. Just relax. You can't do it all. You're not going to do it all for everybody. You're just not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and then there becomes that whole thing about think right and do everything for everybody.
Sorry, I didn't hear you. It went funny. Can I hear you say that again?
I said there's that whole thing about who do you think you are that you want to do everything for everybody.
Right. So this is the tension, right? Exactly. It's like, on the one hand, there's like this awareness that we're part of the oneness and we're just a droplet in this big giant ocean. And then on the other hand, there's also the reality that every droplet is magnificent with unlimited possibility. So you have to find this place. To me, this is the healthy ego place, right? The unhealthy mm-hmm. ego thinks it can do it all. It's ridiculous. The unhealthy ego also thinks that we're garbage, right? The healthy ego knows that we're powerful and capable of great things, but at the same time realizes that we're only one droplet in this giant ocean of meaning. So you want to find that place that's right in the balance, where you're super inspired, mm-hmm. but at the same time realistic about what's possible.
I remember coming to the conclusion that I may never be the person who is going to inspire millions, but I can work with people one-on-one.
Great. Then that's where your calling lives. How beautiful is that?
But I think to some extent it's like that magnificent drop. You know, I am a magnificent drop, but right. I don't have to save everybody.
Well, you can't. You don't have to, and you're certainly not going to be able to anyway.
Right, right. Yeah. So I think that one of the critical lessons for people is to learn to work on yourself, just like you've been doing, just like I've been doing, to work on yourself for healing and for spiritual maturation.
Well, and find your distinct soul scriptures. I mean, for some mm-hmm. people, their path really does lead through a lot of different souls' lives. I mean, it's, you know, look at Oprah Winfrey's life. I mean, not too many people have touched that many people in a lifetime. It's extraordinary. But at the same time, it's no more extraordinary than somebody who's here to learn how to listen better and to work on something subtler and something that is more mm-hmm. one-on-one oriented. And because if that's true, truly their path, if they have peace with path, then it's perfect. I mean, if we're all honoring our scriptures and finding the calling that lives in the bones of our being and living it out, then this whole thing is going to work in such a beautiful and fluid way, in ways that we haven't seen yet.
Well, you know, a long time ago when they were talking about transcendental meditation back in the 70s, mm-hmm. and they did some statistical studies on meditation groups in large cities, and they discovered that where those transcendental groups were practicing, that vandalism and crime actually decreased substantially. So there was the lesson that when you meditate, you're meditating for the world or for everybody. But what you're saying about becoming spiritually mature, doing the work within yourself in order to become a more spiritual being, and embody that within yourself, you're doing exactly the same thing.
Well,
you are still impacting the globe.
Absolutely. I mean, that that study feels a little suspect to me anyway. But apart from that issue, you know, I say transcend nothing, include everything, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I may agree ultimately on the same goal framework as, say, the transcenders mm-hmm. are, in terms of the vision of possibility of love and kindness on the planet. I probably just don't agree with them on how we're going to get there. I think we're going to get there from our feet up, what I call from soul, S-O-L-E to S-O-U-L.
Yeah.
Dealing with all the chakra material on an individual and collective level and developing a society that reflects that expansion from mm-hmm. the ground up. We start with the ground hardcore reality, work our way up. And they're more top-down models, and I don't think they work. I don't think you can go from the top down. Just like you can't have a relationship with somebody that meets you in the sky and you never earth it, it ends up just shattering and crashing down to earth. I've learned the hard way that we have to start with our feet first. And, mm-hmm. you know, with the unresolved material that lives in the bones of our being, if we work that material out, then we naturally ascend, ascending with both feet on the ground, is the name of my second book, where we meet the God self eye to eye, but we actually have foundation to sustain that interface, rather than just standing there on some pogo stick to the stars that inevitably, like a one-winged bird, is going to come crashing down to earth. You know, it's like believing in the secret and selling everything and becoming a yoga instructor and then eventually living in your car as an enlightened master because you have no money left to pay the bills. That's not grounded spirituality.
Right.
Yeah. That's getting out of here.
I think they used to call that back in the church that I went to of being so heavenly bound they were no earthly good.
I like that. Oh. So heavenly bound that they were no earthly good.
Right. Right. And I think that is a lot of times what the practice of not just meditation, but of trying to, and I like meditation, but trying to dissociate from your body.
That's
that is that same thing. That's,
it's all
that
about
is,
where you're, what your intent, where you're moving from when you meditate.
Mm-hmm.
It's also
right.
like when you're making love, where you're making love from. You know, it's all about
right.
where you're doing everything from. And if you meditate as in an effort, and I've done this often, it's been helpful to me to connect to my emotional body rather than to see those feelings and let them float down the river,
mm-hmm.
but to actually spend time with those feelings, to use the technique or a technique meditatively to go deeper into the emotional material, to excavate it and connect back to the source of it. It's a fantastic integrated practice, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But if you're using it as a way to get out of here, then all you're going to do is get out of here. It's not ultimately going to help you a whole lot. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
I know many angry, enraged meditators. I mean, they're fantastic meditators. But, you know, once they get into relationship, they're still throwing plates against the wall. So something didn't work. Something didn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah, when push comes to shove, that's not healing it. That's allowing you to get into an energy or a vibration that pulls you up and away from it. But that's not the same thing as healing the emotional body. You gotta, you can't heal your heart with your mind. You can only heal your heart with your heart. You got to get back into the feelings.
Very true. Well, Jeff, we're coming down to the end. I know you have another thing, something else scheduled, so
yeah.
I don't want to run over
no
for
problem.
You. I do have a comment from Corinne Marshall who said, Jeff, you make so much sense and you're a joy to listen to. Much gratitude to you and your sharing. So we have one person at least.
Right.
I know there's many of them. But
no, that's good. All I need is one. It's good. It's perfect.
I'm grateful as well. But we need to know how people can get a get a hold of you.
Yeah, soulshaping.com is my site, and all the pages and all that stuff and books are there, and there's a link to my film, KarmageddonTheMovie.com, and we'll have a link soon to, we're starting a new movement called Love It Forward. LoveItForward.net should be up in a few
weeks.
Yeah, selling books through homeless people and that kind of thing. So all of that will come in off soulshaping.com.
I saw that you did that about
my first edition,
homeless
of Soul
person
Shaping. Yeah, we're going to do it worldwide with my quotes book, Ascending with Both Feet on the Ground, starting in a few weeks.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now,
feels
and
good.
What about on Facebook? You have a page that people can go to.
Yeah, I got a lot of pages. Yeah, there's Jeff Brown fan page, Open Heart Gang, Love It Forward, and the Soul Shaping Group, International Year of the Woman, and they can connect to me personally on there too. Yeah.
Well, when you get a chance, would you post that in the Conversations group so people can?
Sure. Sure.
Those resources.
Yeah, and I'll also say if they go on soulshaping.com, all those group links are in the upper right corner.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, real good.
You got it.
Well, how are we on time? Are you
I don't know
you
the
need
time.
To run?
What's the time?
The time is Well, it's 1:54 of my time.
Yeah, I got time. I got a little bit more time. Did you have something else you wanted to
get
into?
Okay. Well, there is there's somebody who would like to talk with you, and I can bring her on if you want
that. Do you know her name?
Her name is Ellen Miller.
Okay.
And I'm going to bring her in.
Great.
I don't know if she. Hi, Ellen. You're on the air. This is Jan.
Hi, Jan. It's Ellen. How are you?
Hi, Ellen. I'm fine. And you?
Fine. I've got about 5 minutes, too.
Okay.
I have a 3 o'clock call coming in. Jeff, okay. I just want to say it was very interesting to listen to you. I was born in Pittsburgh. I'm an adoptee, and my birth mother was Jewish, and my birth father was Irish. So I was very interested. I was very interested to hear what you had to say. I did not know this about you. I was not raised with them. And my question to you would be my experience that I had growing up. I was an only child. I was born in the 50s. The abuse that I experienced was not the, you know, the fighting. It was more of the silence. And it was more, you know, it was like walking on eggshells for 20-some years. And so my question, I guess, would be, how do you see, I mean, that's also a trauma. And
Absolutely. I think it's a harder one, actually, in many ways. I think the environments where they're more activated, there's more room for releasing the material. And those silent, neglectful, walking on eggshells environments create all kinds of difficulties because there's no space to release the holdings, you know. I know I do a lot of therapeutic work with people who grew up in those environments, and it's so hard to thaw that out because it's so deeply frozen and embedded.
Uh-huh. Where are you from originally?
Toronto.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I love Toronto. The Four Seasons.
The Four Seasons, right. I think they closed it down, actually. It's condos now. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
Really,
so how have you been able, I mean, as a result of that, how did that impact on you, that kind of an environment in your adult life?
In my teenage years, basically, I ended up with depression. And then in my adult life, I was able to bring myself out of that with the help of a psychiatrist. And then I went searching for my birth family, and I found both birth parents were deceased. So that was really not a fun journey. But I was rejected on both sides of the family, got through that. And right now I'm doing more work on myself, but in a different environment with a therapist that I'm going to be doing EMDR.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. So first they have to get you to a management skill level and then bring you back to the traumas that you've had. So I'm encouraged by this because I've lived with a lot of pain. And basically the way that I was dealing with it is a friend of mine wanted my story to be told, and we were going to do a movie, and we started with this back in 2003. And then they told me I needed to do a book, and so I did the book. It was great in the beginning for the catharsis, but not living after that. You know, you're still living with that pain. So I want to get that. I want to get that out.
Ellen, I'm going to interrupt you for just a minute because we're going to hear from you next week. You're our guest next week on the program. And we don't want to have you. We've only got another minute here that Jeff's available. So how about if we postpone your story until next week, and maybe Jeff will come and listen to you.
Yeah, come listen to that show.
Oh, well, I was just dealing with the emotional stuff that he was talking about. That's not what I'm going to be talking about next week.
Oh,
I found
okay.
I really find your technique, and I really give you a lot of credit to going into really deeply in dealing with that pain. I really give you a lot of credit.
Thank you.
It takes a lot of courage.
Thank you.
It does.
It's our only hope.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Our only hope.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was very enjoyable.
Thanks, Ellen.
All right. Thanks for calling in, Ellen.
Okay,
and we'll look forward to talking with you next week.
Okay, bye now.
Well, Jeff, we're right down to less than a minute of your time. If people want to call in for oracle card readings or to give some other information that they have on your topic, we'll be glad to talk with them. But I don't want to keep
Great.
You late from
thank
what you're
you, Jan.
Doing.
I enjoyed our talk. Thank you so much for that.
Well, thank you very much for being with us. And we'll look forward to seeing you in the Conversations group to post some of that information that you gave us as well.
You got it. I'll do that later.
All right.
Beautiful.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye.
Okay, so everybody, well, that was Jeff Brown, and pretty powerful conversation that we had going on. If you now, we have a few minutes left here. If you have a question, I've drawn four oracle cards that I would be willing to offer. If you have something that you want to call in with, the number's 347-205-9074. Let me repeat it, 347-205-9074, or you can also Skype in, and I can just chatter here for a couple of minutes to give people an opportunity to do that. If you have a question, if you're on the Conversations group and you have a question that you want to pass through Cindy to come, then just go ahead and type in the question and which card you'd like to draw, 1 through 4, and we'll do that. So I want to talk a little bit about what Jeff had to say, because the cards today were so relevant to that, particularly the one about the third eye and having to come down from that that dissociating, you know, trying to get out of your body that we often think of when we're talking about becoming spiritually enlightened and meditating and going beyond, and to come down to that really physical part of ourselves, the part that is like the lizard, like the fish, like the animal, that is the preformed human being that's there. And that's where that real third eye is. That's where the truth of our being is. And to come into all of that of who we are and experiencing not only the beauty of who we are, but also acknowledging that pain, that abandonment, the desertion, the abuse that we have experienced within our lives, to experience all of those things. You don't have to experience them again by yourself. I think that when we start going through this kind of work, it's super important to make sure that you are working with a counselor or a therapist so that you have somebody there who's holding the space for you and who is, in case something happens, can help you through it. This is really vitally important to not try and do it yourself. Downward spiral, and you can't pull yourself out, it's important to have someone there who can help you pull out of that space and can help you to not only acknowledge it, but to go on beyond that and to find your way through, so that we are completely in our bodies. We are spiritual beings within our bodies. This is so important. It's something that I've learned myself over the years. You know, I used to be one of those who wanted to meditate and go out of my body as well and be this spiritually enlightened person and find nirvana and all that other stuff. And it took me a long time to recognize that, well, actually, you know what? Part of what helped me was recognizing that when I was meditating and I got into the third eye space in my forehead and I was, in this blissful state, and something would happen. A door would slam, or I'd hear something outside, or whatever it was. Out of the meditative state immediately. I wasn't like those gurus who could stay in meditation no matter what. But what I found was when I meditated and I brought my attention down to my base chakra, so I was sitting deep in my pelvis, and that's where my focus was, that those different noises and sounds couldn't distract me. They couldn't get through because I was so within my own body, solidly within myself, that I couldn't be thrown out. It's like when you're off balance, you know? When you get up into that forehead place, then often you're out of balance and you can be thrown off balance quickly. You can be shoved off balance. Somebody can just tap you and you're off balance. But when you are solidly within your body and your focus is down in your pelvis, and that's where when you're meditating, that's where you're going. You can't be thrown off balance because it's the difference between a tree with its roots deep in the ground and a bird flying in the air. You know, nobody's going to shoot down a tree. They may chop it down, but they're not going to get the roots. And that root is what springs up with new growth. But a bird flying along the river is an open target for any noise or any trauma that might come into our lives. So pay attention to where you are when you're meditating, when you're focusing. And again, when you know, get into the emotional life that you have, get some help with it, and start to grow and start to become active. The holotropic breath work that Greg was Jeff was talking about from Stanislav Grof is really phenomenal. It is very, very powerful, and it can help you work through, but it's something that you need to do with somebody who knows what they're doing. Okay, Corinne asked a question. Oh, great. She doesn't want to verbalize the question, but she wants card four. So here we go. Which one of these is card four? Oh, card four is called Festive Candle. So here you go, Corinne. Festive Candle, whatever it is that your question is about, has joy, is phenomenal. This is a picture of a whole bunch of flowers. Is it a narcissus or a jasmine? There's this gorgeous white flower with a red front to it, a red inside around the stamen. There's a purple tulip. There's a bright red, looks like a tulip as well. There are all kinds of, there's pussy willows, all kinds of flowers here. And there's this gorgeous white candle with an incredible flame that is lighting up the entire area. It's all golden and white light. And it shows that whatever it is your question is about, there is fulfillment there. It isn't just growing, because these blossoms are in full bloom. So there is fulfillment. There is the time is ripe, whatever it is that you're thinking about. And there is this incredibly beautiful white candle that is lighting the way. So I would suggest that you get a white candle and that you have it in your space and keep it lit as much as you can, and get some flowers and put around in front of that candle as a reminder to you whenever you're thinking of this question or whenever you see it, that you're going to your question and recognizing that it is already, whatever it is already in existence. It is in full bloom. It is manifested. And that the light that's there is going to help keep it manifested. And Cindy added her reading to it and says, the flame comes from inside and is what is burning bright within you as well. And it's already there. Thank you. So now you've had a reading from both of us. But whatever it is that your question is, know that it's already there. And it's burning brightly within you. And when you have it outside of you, manifested outside of you with the flowers and the candle, you'll be able to remember sometimes when you're in doubt that it is already there and it is incredibly alive and beautiful. So that is apparently the only question that we have for today. And I want to thank you all for listening. We're going to have Ellen Miller with us next week. She's going to be talking about her story, and she's in a book with some other 100 other women who have suffered from abuse. So it's going to be kind of a woman's story next week, and invite you to join us at exactly the same time at 12 o'clock Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock UK, 9 o'clock Germany. We'll go around the world here. I don't know all the time, so I can't do that. I want to remind you that our song, I Am Who I Am, is by True Trinity, and you can find them on truetrinity.com, and that you can get a hold of me at jan@purposetalkradio.com. And we hope you'll join us on Facebook at Purpose Talk Radio Conversations Group. So I want to thank you very much, and contact me too if you want an angel reading or an oracle card reading. And remember that I just opened my site of A Medical Advocate. So that's pretty exciting. Go to amedicaladvocate.com and you can find out more about it. And for now, I'm going to say soul blessings. I wish you a wonderful week, and we'll see you next week.
I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me, I am who I am, I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.